this narcotic.
Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight, we're talking about women that's standing up, taking their place. We're talking about women getting ready to move to the next level in business, in economics, in science, in education. Tonight, we're going to talk about the dope, the drugs, the guns, and the mass murder of our community. We're going to talk about that. But I got Sister Mary Hawkins from Detroit. She's going to read the seven number psalm. Before she read that, I want to tell you tonight, if you got a need, plant a seed. Go to my website, theseedabrahamyoursite.com. Go to PayPal and send your donation. Now, I'm asking the Spirit, because I want to get a committee together, Mary, to take care of Sudan, hungry kids. You know, the people that they were doing, but I want a committee of women that's willing to volunteer. If you want to volunteer to be one of the women that saved the babies in Sudan, in Africa, Sudan, I'm going to form a group of women. I haven't talked to them. I want you to be on that committee, Mary. And, you know, women's got to start looking globally. Little babies over in Sudan is starving, no water, malnutrition. We have to work with that. We can't wait for somebody to say, but we're going to do it. We have to make up our mind that we're going to do it penny by penny, nickel by nickel. The one like that. I'm going to have Mary to read the 27 numbers because we're moving on quick, fast, and in a hurry. And she's going to read that for us. Okay, Mary, God bless you tonight. You can read that.
Okay. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When a wicked, even my enemies and my foes came upon me to eat up my flesh, they stumbled and fell. Though a host should encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war should rise against me, in this will I be confident. One thing have I desired of the Lord, that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. For in the time of trouble, he shall hide me in his pavilion. In the secret of his tabernacle shall he hide me. He shall set me up a rock, and now shall my head be lifted up above my enemies round about me. Therefore will I offer in his tabernacle sacrifices of joy. I will sing, yea, I will sing praises unto the Lord. Shall also upon me and answer me. When thou saidest, seek you my face, my heart said unto thee, thy face, Lord, will I seek. Hide not thy face far from me. Put not thy servant away in anger. Thou hast been my help. Leave me not, neither forsake me, O God of my salvation. When my father and my mother forsake me, then the Lord will take me up. Teach me thy way, O Lord, and lead me in a plain path because of my enemies. Deliver me not over unto the will of my enemies, for false witnesses are risen up against me, as such as breathe out cruelty. I have fainted, unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thy heart. Wait, I said on the Lord. I just read Psalm 27, number Psalm. Amen.
Thank you for that, Sister Mary Hawkins in Detroit.
You're welcome.
And I want to volunteer, Mary, for you to be over there, could be part of the women on that committee to save Sudan. I'm going to talk to other women. I would get Lorraine, but she's so busy catching up with all these people that she hadn't seen. And Prophet Lorraine, I'm going to give y'all Prophet Lorraine's number. Somebody in Chicago needs to see her, 773-939-1238. Lorraine has been working hard to help people. But I was concerned about what happened in Sudan with people that are dying of starvation when Americans sending trillions of dollars over to Ukraine to fight a war, and send $1 trillion over to countries. And why don't you send some food to help poor black women and children that is suffering? You know, Israel is rich because white folks support Israel. And this country, which is America, some trillions of dollars over to Israel. Israel got new planes, new tanks. They got modern equipment. Ain't no blacks in their government, okay? So what I'm saying to you, seem like everybody gets something but the black man. Here's the black people in Sudan, little babies starving, malnutrition, and all these European countries fighting, but ain't none thought about bringing something to Sudan to help the people that's suffering. Is it because their skin black? The lot's going on. And the trillions of dollars that this government spent, I'm going to talk about that tonight, trillions of dollars that the CIA, the FBI, is on record. The CIA, the FBI, planted drugs in Chicago, in Detroit, in L.A., all the way into most of these countries, black neighborhoods. And the consequences for that, lots of blacks have been killed, murdered, and we don't make drugs. And now this same government is buying pills. People are dying with laced cocaine. And then they don't okay for you to smoke reefers. And they got another called Baitina, this other stuff you smoke, mess with your lung. This is really killing young black and brown people who's suffering. The money never get to the neighborhood. The neighborhood buy all the drugs, like all the factories they got, the reapers now. Blacks ain't got those centers. White folks got them. People that are rich got them. And we got people in jail now because of cocaine, because of reefers. We got people in jail now because they marched with Dr. Martin Luther King. They're in jail right now because they walked with Dr. King for human rights. We'll say to you tonight, if you got a need to plant a seed, I'm talking to you, 8974, plant your seed. And I'm talking to you, 2020, plant your seed. If you got a need, you need a harvest. You need to see a harvest. Now, what I'm saying to you, I want you to, so I'm going to plant this seed of $57. I like $57. And by the way, read $57 on my phone. I want you to plant a seed, and you know who you are. I could have said $1,000. The Spirit said $57 will break that yoke, will break that yoke off. Y'all know what it said. If you plant that $57 and read that scripture, it's going to break a yoke for you. Go to my website, thusseedabrahamjonesite.com, and drop it. Or else you can go to Cash Out, Bishop TT, and I'll come up, and you do it Cash Out in instant. God bless you. I'm praying for you. That's every door that closes will open up. But I want to tell you, I want to talk about the money, the trillions of dollars being spent, and our government is involved. How can all the dope get on the south side of Chicago, on the south side of West Side, and all the brothers that was involved is in prison in L.A., in Oakland, California, in New Orleans? It was higher ups, you know, and it was told one boy was interviewed in prison. He said, I got my dope directly from the FBI. They brought it to me, told me who to sell it to. Now, people don't believe that, but I want to say this. The guns is being released by the Republican Party. They ain't trying to clean up the guns. Assault weapons, gonna shoot 100 times, people being killed, black on black, white on white, they're being killed because the Republicans will not try to stop the gun sale, but we're going to march. We're going to turn that around. And the Democrat and Republican, they get together, they'll send some money to Ukraine, $1 million. They'll send $1 million over to Israel, but they won't send a dime. They won't get together to send a dime to a black country where people are starving, children are suffering malnutrition, nowhere to stay. Something wrong with this government. Something wrong with these people that's doing evil. I want to say this tonight. You know, the young man they caught with them papers, they sent two loads of soldiers to get him. He had two documents. One document was that was a bloom. Those blooms that they shot down, it was three of them. They just shot down one of them. And all this weather, the storm, the flood, the rain, all this happened back to back because those blooms were letting chemtrails out. And this is what they said to us. It's a weather. Yeah, it's weather bloom. It's making weather happen all over the country. They ain't gonna tell you that. But the boy got the document that money was sent to Ukraine. Money was sent to Israel over $1 million this year. That's $2 trillion. $1 trillion being traveling over there, and you got people hungry in Chicago. You got people that ain't got nowhere to stay. You got people that are sick right now. You got guys that fought in Vietnam and Korea, can't see a dentist and a doctor. That's where we at. How did we get here? We got this way by people being evil, hateful, murderous. And then right now, they're paying young folks to go downtown to mess up downtown because you got a black man. I heard through the grapevine, all them kids were down, they got paid to go downtown and tear up. But I want to say to the Lord, what men, lock them all up. Lock them all up. And don't let them out to their parents come and get them. Because this got to stop. And it stopped by us moving on it. Now, I want to get into this tonight. I got Dr. King talking about what happened in Mississippi and Arkansas. I'll play that at the tail end. But I want to deal tonight with the dope that the CIA, our government, and let it flow in Florida, in New Orleans, Chicago, West Side, South Side, in Ohio, and even in St. Paul, Minnesota, and in them. Lots of these cops is on drugs, and they so high, they don't know what they do. They kill him. 38 times the man that was shot in Akron, 38 times, and all 38 policemen got all free. How did we get here, Jerry? We got here because the church have turned its back. The pastors is too busy not taking care of the business. How do we get here where children bringing guns to school, shooting teachers? How do we get here at this level that babies that's being born with holes in their heart, no liver, no lungs, because of the massive drugs that been pumped in? How did we get here where it's hard to find food that they eat because of chemicals? And how did we get into the hospital selling all kind of drugs and ain't trying to help you? You got to buy a drug for a headache, drug for this, a drug for that. How did we get at this level where we hate each other? Well, we are fighting each other at the level where men marry men and women marry into the Democrat Party is pushing this homosexual stuff. They want to push God out the way. They want you to marry a man, marry a woman, because they are demonic from the top to the bottom. And the Republican Party want to sell assault rifles to kill everybody. How did we get here? They have so many evil people in Washington saying they represent us. Because they don't. Oh, hallelujah. I said, and I won't take it back.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh. And I'm feeling good. Christian, you see, you know how I feel. With a running tree, you know how I feel. Blossom on the tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good. Dragonfly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies all having fun, you know what I mean. Sleep in peace when day is done, that's what I mean. And this old world is a new world, in a bold world. Oh.
need to understand where we at in America. We at a level where we must come up. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And I want to tell you tonight, a breakthrough on his way. You know, knowledge, the truth, come out and lied. And because of their lies, we had death with all kind of people OD'd on cocaine. Many family members lost sons, daughters. And then they did the shooting and all, and law enforcement didn't know what was going on. But I told you, a bucket of truth will bring out all the faith in the world. So the bucket of truth is what's happening. We're going to the investigating of the drug dealing of the CIA and the FBI and the government directly involved. Reason is important. It happened in Chicago. It happened in Ohio. It happened in Arkansas, Mississippi. That's why the black community so rapidly, because drugs was dropped in and killed our youth, killed our women, and try to give drugs to women to keep them not having healthy children. Let's hear from that.
Prosecution, after two exiled Congress supporters wrote letters filed with the court that the money was for the reinstatement of democracy in Nicaragua, and that is in quote. So therefore, I look forward to hearing from the Inspector General concerning his findings that there's no information that the CIA had any connection with the defendants in the Frogman case, and that there's no information that the Contras benefited from the drug trafficking of the Frogman case. And I also anticipate questions as to whether officials of the CIA hampered in any way the investigation of the prosecution of this matter, because it hits us so directly at home in our community in Northern California. I still have some questions, even though I have reviewed the report. Once again, Mr. Chairman, thank you for allowing us to have these questions out in the open.
Thank you, Ms. Pelosi. Mr. Skaggs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be very brief. I join in thanking the chair for calling these hearings. Want as well to express my respect and appreciation for Mr. Dixon's contribution to this effort, but want to make a special point of recognizing the public service of Fred Hitz to the country and to the Central Intelligence Agency. I've known him for some time, independent of his current position. And what I have to say, I think, really picks up on Ms. Harmon's comment about trust. Even this committee, authorized and assisted as we are by able staff to look into the workings of the intelligence community, ultimately have to rely on trust ourselves in sorting out fact from fiction, from innuendo. The key individual with regard to the Central Intelligence Agency in establishing and nurturing a sense of trustworthiness in all of this is the Inspector General in the person of Mr. Hitz. I believe his conduct in office and his execution of his responsibilities have been absolutely key during my service on the committee to establishing the kind of trustworthiness in both directions that enables us to do our work for our colleagues and the American people. And Fred, I just want to say thank you very much and Godspeed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I join my colleagues in commending you for having this hearing today, and I want to thank you for bringing it before the public as well. The importance and the seriousness of the allegations that have been before this committee on this issue merit this type of a hearing, and especially the proper resolution that this hearing can give this matter is critical. Critical both to the confidence of the American people in their agencies, critical to this oversight committee and its work that it must do in looking at and deciding these types of issues. You know, our nation depends upon this information, and it must have the confidence in the information that it is not tainted by any illegal act, an act that might undermine our ability to rely on this information. And it must not have any taint of illegality for the agency. It itself. Those agencies that provide valuable intelligence for anti-drug, economic, or military information must themselves, as I said earlier, be untainted by illegal acts or even the innuendo of an illegality. The importance of this hearing today will hopefully clear the air on these issues, rebuild the confidence between the citizens of this country and our intelligence agencies, and finally, help in an equally important matter to rebuild the credibility and our confidence in the information and intelligence that we receive from these agencies. The men and women of our intelligence gathering agencies deserve no less than our complete confidence in their work to promote a better America. I look forward to the testimony of the witnesses welcoming them here today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Gibbons. Opening statements are completed. It's at this time that we welcome colleagues who are not on the committee for their commentary on the report that is the subject of this hearing. It is the report of the investigation, allegations of connections between CIA and the Contras in cocaine trafficking to the United States via the London, California story, January 29, 1998, as presented by Frederick P. Hitz, who we were hearing from. It had been my intention to call members in order of seniority, but I have been advised that the senior member of the two that we expected to hear from has deferred to Juanita Melinda McDonald to come forward first. Since you have been out front in trying to help us on this matter and come to grips with it, and that indeed have had hearings in your district and have had the direct involvement, and we welcome you today. We welcome your commentary on the report and the observations you may have for us.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Before I begin my testimony, please allow me a moment to express my appreciation to you, Chairman Goss, and you, Ranking Member Dix, for your efforts and those of your colleagues on the House Permanent Select Committee of Intelligence to wade through the morass of allegations stemming from press reports of the Central Intelligence Agency's involvement in drug trafficking in South Central Los Angeles. I would especially like to acknowledge my Southern California colleagues on the committee, Congress members Jerry Lewis, Julian Dixon, and Jane Harmon, as well as Congressional Black Caucus Chairwoman Maxine Waters and California Delegation Co-Chairwoman Lucille Raubal-Allard. Their support of my efforts to give voice to the concerns of my constituents in the immediate aftermath of the controversial press reports alleging CIA wrongdoing was encouraging and meant a great deal to me and residents of California's 37th Congressional District. Mr. Chairman and committee members, I commend the chairman for fulfilling his commitment to hold this hearing. Mr. Chairman, I too was deeply disturbed by the allegations as reported in the San Jose Mercury News in August 1996 of the Central Intelligence Agency's involvement in the introduction, financing, and distribution of crack cocaine in the 1980s. Consequently, I contacted administration officials, the appropriate leaders of the House of Representatives, and even the former UN Secretary General to ask their respective organizations to look into these allegations. I also wrote to mayors of major urban cities, many of whom responded by confirming that their cities witnessed a significant increase in drug trafficking and proliferation of cocaine use and abuse during the same time period. On September 11th, I introduced House Resolution 518 to establish a special select committee to look into these allegations. I did so, Mr. Chairman, not with any intent to sway the permanent select committee, but because I believe the persistence of issues raised by this and other controversies about the CIA's accountability, the agency's ability to investigate itself, the public's desire and need for the truth, and the agency's mission in a post-Cold War world require much broader congressional involvement in these important proceedings. As many of you are aware, I convened two town hall meetings in the fall of 1996. in response to the widespread feelings of anxiety, public outrage, and concern throughout my district in the wake of news accounts which seemed to implicate the CIA in drug trafficking in the early and mid-1980s in South Central Los Angeles and urban America. The first town hall meeting at Compton Community College on October 19, 1996, was attended by hundreds of residents from my drug-ravaged community. The purpose of the Compton Congressional Inquiry was to educate myself and other members of Congress about the specific issues raised by allegations of U.S. government involvement in and knowledge of drug trafficking in South Central Los Angeles. I also sought out how the local community responded to the widespread harm caused by the scourge of substance abuse, regardless of the source or cause, and allowed them to seek answers to these allegations. I invited the Justice Inspector General, Michael Bromwich, to come and meet with leaders and members of the community so that they could express their concerns. Mr. Bromwich observed the proceedings of the congressional inquiry and took notes with a number of panelists testifying, including Ricky Ross' mother and Ricky Ross himself, via telephone from the San Jose Detention Center. On November 15th, in response to my invitation, then Director of Central Intelligence, John George, made an unprecedented visit to Elm Lawn High School in the Watts section of my district to directly address the concerns raised by my constituents and me, generated by these allegations during a public town hall meeting. His visit illustrated a new openness within the agency to wrestle with the issues raised by the San Jose Mercury News press reports, as well as the persistent skepticism with which the CIA denials of wrongdoing have been met by the public. Those media reports, some of which have since been retracted, suggested that the crack cocaine trade, which has devastated whole communities, was promulgated by official government activities under the aegis of the Central Intelligence Committee, agency, I'm sorry. While the public forum received widespread media coverage, a private meeting with community leaders, activists, and elected officials provided them with an opportunity to express their concerns and pose their questions directly to former Director George. I am here today to articulate some of the concerns my constituents and I have about this report and the ongoing controversy. First, this report is merely the first volume of two and focuses on the allegations of connections between the CIA and the Contras, as alleged in the San Jose Mercury News. A second unpublished volume presumes to address the findings related to the CIA's knowledge of any other alleged drug trafficking by the Contras or other persons associated with the Contra operation. Release of a third report prepared by the Inspector General of the Department of Justice has been withheld on order of the Attorney General. Consequently, the results of the internal investigations by the CIA and the Department of Justice have yet to materialize. Therefore, the report is limited in scope. Nevertheless, several questions related to this first volume continue to be raised. Did CIA personnel or assets have any involvement in supplying or assisting drug traffickers in South Central Los Angeles and or elsewhere? The report answers this question in the negative. However, what are we to make of the questions raised by defense attorney Harold Braun, a panelist at the October 19th inquiry, who maintains that a suspect in the custody of the Los Angeles County Deputy Sheriff was allowed to make a long-distance telephone call to Virginia after asserting he worked for the CIA? What evidence do we have in this report that this allegation was or is being pursued, given the report does not mention investigation of telephone logs? And if so, why? Did the CIA aggressively pursue its role, including the charge to collect, produce, and disseminate intelligence on foreign aspects of narcotics production and trafficking when it received information about possible Contra involvement in drug trafficking? We apparently have to wait until Volume 2 to know the answer to this question. However, the information provided in this report suggests that the CIA turned a blind eye, at best, to information that suggests drug trafficking by Contra operatives. Did the CIA personnel intercede on behalf of any Nicaraguan Contra figures or nationals opposed to the Sandinistas government in any drug-related investigation or prosecution by local, state, or federal personnel? This report responds to specific allegations, but the report does not address what the CIA could or should have done in pursuing the portion of the agency's charge that relates to collecting, producing, and disseminating intelligence on foreign aspects of narcotics production and trafficking. It remains unclear to me what the CIA actually did to investigate or direct its intelligence assets to determine whether any Contras were engaged in drug trafficking. Should the 250,000 pages of documents reviewed for this first volume be declassified and made available for public inspection? And the ultimate question is, can the CIA investigate itself? The Central Intelligence is unique among government agencies. By its very nature, the CIA's secrets and the rules of confidentiality make investigations difficult. Investigations into wrongdoing start at a disadvantage, which turns the usual rules of American justice on its head. As the presumption of innocence is compromised by the agency's secrecy and the classification of documents, we are being asked to trust career employees of the agency to sort out and report the truth in the name of national security. Indeed, news reports which followed leaks regarding the content of this report last December suggest that some CIA personnel were neither nor seriously interviewed nor not questioned at all about what they knew. As a result, the public remains skeptical. Some will perceive that this hearing is premature and that this report by itself does not adequately address the allegations of the San Jose Mercury News that prompted the public outcry. To its credit, the series shed light on some very real problems that require real solutions, from substance abuse to CIA accountability. I look forward to subsequent hearings by this committee upon release of the other reports, at which time we may all be in a better position to make judgments. Nevertheless, I hope that the Select Committee will give their content, methodologies, and findings the scrutiny they deserve, and in a similar spirit of openness, make themselves available to my constituents to respond to any questions these reports generate. I believe such openness is critical to restoration of the credibility and public trust necessary to allow intelligence gathering activities, which by their nature are secretive, to coexist with democracy. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you very much, Ms. Melinda McDonald. That was a very fine statement, and you've raised some specific questions for the committee to take under consideration, and we shall. I just needed to advise you your observation that some may consider this hearing premature. Interestingly enough, there are some who consider it to be late as well. It's hard to get it all right all the time. One of the reasons we felt it was important to have this hearing at this time is because Mr. Hitz is on to greater glories with new employment, we are advised, and we wanted to make sure we had the opportunity for him to explain his report to us as he could. And that is why we decided to do this today.
And Mr. Chairman, that's some of the problems that my constituents have is that by the time they get accustomed to one person, he then leaves, and there's a new person on the horizon, and therefore they're not just truthful. They're not really sure whether or not those persons really have their teeth into the feelings and the emotions that have been raised by my constituents.
It's a fair observation, I'm sure, from your constituents' point of view. I assure you we intend to keep our teeth in this until we finish, and I don't plan to leave.
Thank you,
I don't think
Chairman.
Any of my other colleagues are. Well, none of my other colleagues are planning to leave except
seems
to
that is also premature.
To stay involved in any way they profitably can for the good of public service.
Thank you so much for the testimony.
Thank you very much, ma'am. At this time, then, I would call Maxine Waters from California's 35th District, and we are pleased to have you before us today, Maxine, to talk about the report that is being provided to us by Mr. Hitz.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members. I'd like to thank you for holding this hearing. Certainly, It's not expected of the Intelligence Committee, and I'm very pleased that we have so many members present today. And I'd like to beg your indulgence. I know you spoke of a time limit, but it is very difficult to talk about all of this information in 10 minutes, but I'm going to try and do it as quickly as I possibly can. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm here today to testify about the failure of the Central Intelligence Agency to conduct a serious and thorough investigation into the allegations of CIA involvement in cocaine trafficking to fund its contra war activities. Unfortunately, my fear that the CIA would be unable to investigate itself has been confirmed with this report. The Inspector General's report lacks credibility. It is fraught with contradictions and illogical conclusions. In a September 3, 1996 memo, then CIA Director John Deutsch laid out the framework for this investigation. In his instructions to CIA Inspector General Frederick P. Hitz, Director Deutsch stated, "I have no reason to believe that there is any substance to the allegations published in the Mercury News." Despite his premature conclusion, a serious, substantial, and credible investigation and interview process would have proven him wrong. If the CIA director's premature conclusion was meant to direct the final outcome, he has succeeded. This report's sweeping denial of the CIA's knowledge of drug trafficking related to the Contras defies the evidence and the logic that the CIA should have known. From the days of the CIA's first response to the allegations raised in the Dark Alliance series, many skeptics believe that the CIA could never produce a credible or truthful review of wrongdoings by its own agency. These skeptics could point, if they'd like, to this Sunday's Los Angeles Times to confirm their fears. The Times reported, in another case, that after 37 years, the CIA finally admitted publicly the most profound deception imaginable on an American family. Thomas P. Ray and his top secret squadron of National Guard bombers were shot down during a CIA bombing mission in the Bay of Pigs debacle. For 37 years, the CIA denied that Mr. Ray and his squadron even existed, much less were shot down by Cuban troops in 1961. Only this month, faced with a document obtained by Freedom of Information Act request by the National Security Archives, did the CIA finally admit the truth 37 years later. My deep concern about the allegations raised in the Dark Alliance series that my government could have in any way been involved in or had knowledge of drug trafficking has caused me to spend much of my own time and resources to find out more about these allegations. After reading the Dark Alliance series, I interviewed Gary Webb, the writer of the series. And by the way, Mr. Chairman and members, Mr. Gary Webb is here today. He's sitting right here in this seat, and I invited him to come. He's put a lot of time and work into this investigation, and I have been working with him since the first day that I read it, and I think that he should be privy to all information as he continues his work in this area. I interviewed Gary Webb, the writer of the series. I invited him to come to my district in South Central Los Angeles to respond to questions from local residents. My community encouraged my investigation and supported me in my efforts to delve deeper into these allegations. I personally interviewed a number of key figures in the Dark Alliance series. I first met with and interviewed Mr. Alan Fenster, who was the attorney for Ricky Ross. Then I drove to San Diego to the Metropolitan Detention Center, where I interviewed Mr. Ricky Ross, the young man who was trafficking in drugs in South Central Los Angeles that were being sold to him by Mr. Norman Meneses and Mr. Danilio Blandone. He was being held in the Metropolitan Detention Center facility on drug charges. I also then drove to a restaurant in the Valley where I met with Mr. Celerino Castillo, the DEA agent who had investigated the drug trafficking operation at Ilopango Airfield in El Salvador. Castillo had documented that the CIA directed this drug trafficking operation out of two hangars using Contra Supply Network as a route for shipping drugs into the United States. I then interviewed former LAPD officer Mike Rupert, who states he was forced to leave the LAPD after he uncovered a connection between the CIA and narcotic trafficking operations in California and Louisiana. Mr. Rupert also was interviewed by the CIA for its report. I met and had numerous telephone conversations with Mr. Jerry Gazzetta, a detective with the City of Bell and a key member of the multi-agency task force working with the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department investigating the Blondell narcotics operation. Gazzetta was a level one informant whose information was the basis of the affidavit of L.A. Sheriff Tom Garten that resulted in the October 1986 raid of the Blondell operation's 14 sites in Southern California. I visited the Records Division of the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department and uncovered the sheriff's reports regarding the October 1986 drug bust. I was the first to obtain the copies of the documentation regarding the raids. They had said prior to that time that they did not exist, they could not be found, and I literally went in and by accident was able to access these documents, and they quickly tried to retrieve them from me, and of course I refused to leave until I had copies of what should have been public documents. On January 3rd, 1997, using my own personal funds, I flew to Nicaragua to meet with Enrique Miranda Jaime, a former Sandinista official and drug partner of Norwin Meneses, a central figure in the allegations in the Dark Alliance series. I was contacted by someone who had information about the Colombian cartels and their connection to Norwin Meneses. When I arrived in Nicaragua, I was taken to the prison in the town of Grenada by State Department representatives, where I met with Miranda himself. Mr. Miranda told me some of the information that he gave to the CIA in this investigation, which is reported on pages 54 and 55 of the IG's report. Mr. Randa currently is in prison after being convicted for smuggling 764 kilos of cocaine with his partner, Norwin Meneses. Meneses told Miranda in detail that Meneses worked for the Contras and that his drug trafficking operation had the support of the CIA. Meneses also told Miranda that he was receiving support directly from Oliver North and passing on the funds to support Contra groups. I met with Mr. Thomas Borge, a former Sandinista Interior Minister and Head of Intelligence. Mr. Borge came to meet with me from Nicaragua to South Central Los Angeles and waited for hours until I completed a day-long schedule, and I then spent some 4 hours with him. I have also had numerous telephone conversations with Corel Talavera Baca, the girlfriend of Rafael Cornejo, who was a relative and part of Norwin Meneses' drug trafficking organization, as well as a longtime business partner of Danilo Blandone, another central figure in the Dark Alliance series. I received information from Ms. Baca and Mr. Cornejo, who were connected to Carlos Lederer, a Colombian drug dealer and co-founder of the Medellin cartel. It was through Lederer's private island that the Medellin cartel moved massive amounts of cocaine to Miami and the United States. Ms. Baca had visited Carlos Lederer's private island and have information regarding the connection between Mr. Lederer and Norman Meneses. I've had over a half dozen telephone conversations with her, and she has sent me information relative to that operation. I have looked into many of the main allegations raised in Gary Webb's series, and I thoroughly reviewed the Inspector General's report. In addition, I have read many letters and reviewed volumes of information sent to me and have visited a large number of people who have claimed to have information about the drug dealing in South Central Los Angeles. In my informed opinion, Mr. Chairman, the CIAIG report and the investigation lacks credibility and its conclusions must be dismissed. Let me turn to some of the specifics of the Inspector General's report. The average reader likely will find the structure of this report bizarre and confusing. I also question the report's methodology, its sweeping conclusions, its cleverly worded denials, and its selective quoting of documents. The report states, that 365 interviews were conducted, but only summarized the statements from 12 individuals connected to the South Central Los Angeles specific allegations. I have a list of over 70 individuals who should have been interviewed under oath by the CIA if the investigation was to be considered credible. Did the CIA interview all of these people? Because the report fails to list who was actually interviewed. We have no way of knowing. In addition, only 40 pages of this report, titled The California Story, actually deal with the allegations of the South Central crack cocaine Contra connection. The report mentions a half dozen other CIA and Contra officials interviewed, but does not offer even a cursory summary of their testimony. So let me do what the report failed to do. The following individuals associated with the Contras are or were either CIA agents or CIA assets. Now, I'm going to name these individuals, and I'm going to say to you, Mr. Chairman and members, that even though the report cleverly refers to agents, we should be talking about agents and or assets. I am going to say to you today in no uncertain terms, Mr. Adolfo Calero was a CIA asset, and he didn't just start with Norwin Meneses. He started working with the American Embassy as a CIA asset, and many of the funds for aid were funneled through him. Mr. Enrique Bermudez was a CIA asset. Mr. Marcos Aguado, a Contra pilot and accused drug dealer. Mr. Francisco Aviles, a Contra official in Costa Rica. In the Frogman case, Mr. Ivan Gomez, CIA agent, who accepted drug money from Mr. Meneses. Mr. Dagoberto Nunes, who ran a shrimp company for the Oliver North in Costa Rica. Rene Carvo, a Cuban-American who worked with the Contras in Costa Rica. Mr. Francisco Shans, owner of the shrimp company for Oliver North in Costa Rica. Mr. Edmundo Meneses, American-trained Nicaraguan general and Norwin Meneses' brother. Mr. Sebastian Gonzalez, Contra leader in Costa Rica and drug partner of Meneses. I assert here today that these are all CIA assets, and I would challenge this committee to ask the Inspector General and others, perhaps in the CIA, to document for you whether or not my allegations are true. They should give you sworn testimony as to whether or not they have knowledge about the people that I'm submitting to you being assets of the CIA. Today, I'm asking this committee to obtain the written response from the CIA that either categorically confirms or denies they are or were CIA assets or agents. Another major problem with the investigation underlying the report was the CIA's lack of subpoena power. This meant that some of the most important CIA and other officials were never interviewed. Three former unnamed senior CIA managers would only respond in writing. Six other key CIA personnel and former DE agent Castillo refused to be interviewed. The CIA agents included Duane Claridge, Joseph Fernandez, and Claire George. All of these senior CIA officials had major responsibilities for the CIA's Contra operation. There can be no thorough investigation without sworn testimony from each of these individuals. They should be subpoenaed. Jose Fernandez was a former CIA station chief in Costa Rica while the Meneses drug organization was operating from there. Dewey Claridge was a CIA officer who helped create the Contras at a time when the Meneses ring first began dealing cocaine for the FDN. His name also appeared in Oliver North's notebooks as being responsible for making quid pro quo deals with known drug king Manuel Noriega. Claridge summed up how serious he thought this investigation was when he told reporters in December 1997 that the CIA, quote, sent me questions that were bullshit, and I wrote back they were a bunch of bullshit. When I spoke with journalists following the release of the report this past January, much to my surprise, they had to admit to me they had not even read the entire report. They admitted they had only read the glossy 8-page summary, which offered unsubstantiated conclusions of the CIA's innocence and blanket denials of the Dark Alliance serious allegations. Had they only read the report in its entirety as I did, they would have learned that allegations of drug trafficking and connections between the Contras and the CIA were not new. In fact, the report even lists and summarizes some of the other investigations that found Contra involvement in drug trafficking. For example, the Senate Subcommittee on Terrorism, Narcotics, and International Operations, chaired by Senator John Curry, conducted a 2-year investigation into allegations of Contra involvement in drugs and arms trafficking. The CIA Inspector General report summarizes some of the Kerry Commission's 1,166-page reports, devastating findings on page 35 through 38. These are some of the admissions. Drug traffickers use the Contra war and their ties to the Contra as cover for their criminal enterprises in Honduras and Costa Rica. Assistance from the drug lords was crucial to the Contras. And the traffickers, in turn, promoted and protected their operations by associating with the Contra movement. Drug traffickers provided support to the Contras and used the supply network of the Contras. Contras knowingly received both financial and material assistance from the drug traffickers. In each case, one or another U.S. government agency had information regarding these matters, either while they were occurring or immediately thereafter. Members of the Contra movement were involved in drug trafficking, including pilots who flew supplies for the Contras, mercenaries who worked for the Contras, and Contra supporters throughout Central America. Drug traffickers helped in the Contra supply operations through business relations with Contra groups. Drug traffickers contribute cash, weapons, planes, pilots, air supply services, and other materials to the Contras. U.S. Department funds authorized by Congress for humanitarian assistance was paid to drug traffickers. In some cases, these drug traffickers received the State Department's funds after having been indicted by federal law enforcement agencies on drug charges in other cases where the subject of pending investigations by those agencies. The FDN Contra Group moved Contra funds through a narcotics drug trafficking and money laundering operation. Drug trafficking for the Contra movement was done by some because they were told that their actions were either on behalf of or sanctioned by the U.S. government. Not included in the CIA IG report are other key findings by the Kerry Committee. Despite widespread trafficking through the war zones of northern Costa Rica, the Kerry Committee was unable to find a single case which was made on the basis of a tip or a report by an official of a U.S. intelligence agency. This, despite an executive order requiring intelligence agencies to report drug trafficking to law enforcement officials, and that drug trafficking on the Southern Front was reported to the CIA officials. U.S. officials involved with the Contras knew that drug traffickers were using the Contra infrastructure and that the Contras were receiving assistance from drug profits. Yet, they turned a blind eye and did not report these individuals to the appropriate law enforcement agencies. How can this report include these incriminating findings by elected officials, including Senators Kerry, Brock, and Monahan, while others summarily dismissing any CIA knowledge of or involvement in Contra drug trafficking into the U.S.? This is an outrageous contradiction. Moreover, the report is littered with damaging admissions. This report admits Norwin Meneses was one of the biggest drug dealers in America, either north and south, and he supplied Danilo Blandone. Blandone, in turn, was the source who supplied Ricky Ross, and Blandone and Meneses did so unhindered by the CIA. It is unreasonable to think Meneses was connected to the CIA, given the Contras were a CIA creation and that the CIA handled every aspect of the Contra operation. Pages 20 through 24 of this report confirms that the CIA essentially created, funded, supplied, and trained the Contras, and that the CIA was intimately involved in determining their strategy and running their operations. Meneses was never arrested by U.S. law enforcement. He was permitted free entrance to the United States and even issued a visa. How was this allowed, and why was it allowed to continue? Let me just say that Meneses dealt drugs in the United States for over 10 years or more. Starting back in 1974, he was a drug dealer before he came to the United States. He was even involved in a murder in Nicaragua. He dealt drugs, any interference without any intervention. He had assets and businesses in San Francisco. As a matter of fact, Congresswoman Pelosi referred to the Frogman case. When they tracked down some of Meneses' people, they tracked them to the very house that was connected with the Frogman case where many of those people were involved. Meneses was well known by the CIA, the DEA, the DIA, and everybody in the United States as a drug dealer who was supplying Danilo Blandone, who was supplying Ricky Ross. How he stayed in the United States all of those years, being known from 1974, selling drugs that ended up helping to support the Contras, and nobody, but nobody knew it, is absolutely amazing. Meneses was never arrested by the U.S. enforcement. He was permitted free entrance again to the United States and even issued a visa. How was this allowed, and why was it allowed to continue? The CIA and DEA records are full of knowledge about Meneses' drug dealing operation. This knowledge was substantiated in this report, even this report. The CIA knew of his drug trafficking by 1984, and the DEA had known of his trafficking activities as early as 1974. Incredibly, the report fails to mention anything about the activities of Adolfo Calero, only mentioning that he was interviewed. He was the key Contra leader and CIA agent on the Southern Front. Damning public information ties Calero to drug trafficking. In a December 1986 interview, Calero told the Costa Rican newspaper La Nacion that he met with drug kingpin Norwin Meneses at least six times and that he knew Meneses was involved in drug trafficking. Now, in our investigation, we had found out that Meneses had met with Adolfo Calero, and that Meneses and Blandone had been going to these meetings, both in San Francisco and in Los Angeles, despite the fact that these conclusions of these drug dealers having no connection to the Contras. Thank goodness your report did identify six visits. We only knew about two. We have a picture of Meneses and Adolfo Calero and others at one of these Contra meetings that were going on all over California. In addition, there are many other key facts that were confirmed by this report. Drug kingpin Norwin Meneses supported and was involved with the Contras. On page 76-77, drug dealer Norwin Meneses admitted giving money to the California chapter of the FDN Contras and that he was involved in the 1985 attempt to obtain material support, medical and general supplies for the Contra movement. Now, there are a lot of discrepancies about how much. You will find in your report it differs somewhat with information that was testified to over on the Senate side when they held the semblance of a hearing over there. I have maintained that it does not matter how much money. It does not matter whether or not it was, as Eden Pastora testified on that side, that he only got a few thousand dollars in a couple of trucks, or it is an admission that Norman Meneses supplied about $40,000 plus medical supplies and other things. The fact of the matter is, the reason I'm so interested in this and the reason I'm so outraged by it, as a public elected officials, all of us must be concerned that our government could have anyway been involved in drug trafficking. Drug trafficking. That's a very, very serious offense against the people of this nation. We cannot afford to have our government, I don't care under what pretense, a covert operation or any kind of operation involved in drug trafficking. Page 70 to 71 of the report documents the connection between CIA assets and FDN military leader Enrique Bermudez, Meneses, and Blandón. Blandón and Meneses traveled to Bolivia in 1982 to make a drug deal and stopped en route to Honduras. While in Honduras, Blandón and Meneses met Bermudez for the second time. Bermudez asked Blandón and Meneses to help raise money and supplies for the FDN. He let the drug traffickers know that their support would be welcome because, I quote, and everybody quotes, even your reported quotes, that he said, the ends justifies the means. Blandón then describes how he and Meneses were escorted to airport by armed Contras after the meeting with Bermudez. Blandón left the meeting. He left this meeting with $100,000 in a bag to buy drugs. The profits from the sale of these drugs were to be used to buy supplies and fund the Contras. Blandón tells of how he ran into trouble at the airport in Honduras when he was caught with the $100,000. But guess what? Just like in the Frogman case, where they caught them with the dope and the money, and they returned the $36,000 based on that attorney general that you had in San Francisco having been told that it was Contra money. This man with $100,000 in drug money to buy more drugs for more supplies was assisted by the Contras at the airport. And even though they had stopped him, they had taken $100,000 out of his brief. With the intervention of the Contras, they gave it back to him. And he went along his merry way. Where did $100,000 come from?
Begin to conclude the remarks.
Yes, I'm
very much
get
appreciate
there.
We've been over generous. We're taking away from time for the
I appreciate Mr. Goss, and I
know you have written remarks which we will accept for the record without objection.
Where did the $100,000 come from? Did they give back the $100,000 to Blandón because of the Contra CIA connection? Well, Mr. Chairman and members, it's hard to refute and to help educate in 10 minutes. I'm going to submit this for the record, but I'm going to close by saying this. This report is not credible. This report does not do the job, Mr. Chairman. We owe it to ourselves as public policy makers to do something. Why do I do all of this? Because I want to find some CIA operatives, assets, or agents and somehow convict them. That's not going to happen. And I don't believe that, and that's not what I'm trying to do. I am trying to raise the level of this discussion because we've got some work to do as public policy makers. The least we could do is develop public policy that will indicate that drug trafficking can never be used in any covert operation, no matter what is being attempted. We cannot continue to put our heads in the sand. It's a shame what happened with the Kerry Report. The idea that members of the Congress of the United States on the Senate side could have presented us with so much documentation. And then years later, we have the investigation that was done by the San Jose Mercury, and we find more information about drug trafficking, and either the CIA absolutely knowing or turning its head, and we still can't come up with public policy. At the same time, we're spending millions of dollars talking about a war on drugs. Give me a break, Mr. Chairman and members. We can do better than this. I will not go away, members. I cannot go away. My community has been devastated, as many communities across this nation. As a result of this work, I've been in at least 7 or 8 states with town hall meetings, including New York and New Jersey and St. Louis, and I continue to have several requests every week to come and do town hall meetings and radio stations, because people are outraged and concerned about the fact that somehow this drug problem won't go away and the idea that the government could be involved. I challenge this committee to get involved with public policy that would get our government out of ever being involved in any way. And while you're doing this, why hasn't something been said about General Davila in Honduras, who also was a CIA asset that was caught putting a ton of drugs into the airplane? The drugs found its way into the United States and was sold on the streets. And that was recently, and we still haven't heard a word. When I check with the Justice Department, they tell me they can't say anything. And I suppose you have information you can't say anything about. But I think somehow we've got to do better. The lives of our children and our communities are at stake. I thank you, and I submit this for the record and more information and documents if you would like to have it.
Thank you, gentlelady, very much for her testimony. At this time, I would like to swear in Mr. Hitz.
I want to commend Congresswoman Waters for the obvious amount of work and effort that she has made here. And I want you to know that we are certainly willing to meet with you and your staff. We want as much information as you have so that, because we are in a, as you know, we're going to do an investigation of our own. The Inspector General is going to present his report, but this committee has pledged that we will have our own independent investigation. So all the work that you've done, we would like to benefit from it, and I compliment you for your efforts.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. We would obviously welcome from either of our two colleagues who are here today or any other colleagues who may see these proceedings or will be interested in this, any observations they have on this report, which is the subject of our hearing, which in fact we are now going to have officially presented to us by Mr. Hitz. Mr. Hitz, may I ask you to raise your right hand? Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you for joining us today. I would advise members that Mr. Hitz went out of his way to accommodate our schedule. I believe he has been without sleep for at least a couple of days in order to travel back here, and we are obliged for that consideration.
Well, I'm
on the floor to you and hope that you will present comments you wish to on this report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I assure the committee that I'm happy to be here today, and hopefully I'll be able to answer your questions irrespective of distance traveled. I feel a little bit as if we've had a dessert first. Been a very serious and thorough discussion of by the two Congress persons about their views of my report, and so I'm happy to have the occasion now to summarize it for you. And although this is a lengthy statement, I ask that you bear with me because I think it's quite important to get it all in the record. When I appeared before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence in open session on October 23, 1996, I reported that at the request of then-Director of Central Intelligence John Deutsch on September 3, 1996, I immediately initiated an inquiry into the allegations that stemmed from a three-part series called Dark Alliance that was published in the San Jose Mercury News in August of 96. That series discussed the drug trafficking activities of several individuals who had been implicated in cocaine trafficking in California. As you know, the series also suggested that the Nicaraguan Contras, described as CIA's army, benefited from the drug trafficking activities of Ricky Ross, Danilo Blandón, Norwin Meneses, and others, and that these activities were responsible for the emergence of crack cocaine in South Central Los Angeles and elsewhere in America. The series also intimated that CIA may have been involved in drug trafficking, or at least had knowledge of those activities and may have given its approval for them. On October 23, 1996, I promised Congress and the American people to have my office, quote, conduct as thorough a review as possible of all available information and report what we find candidly and completely. I am pleased to be able to come before this committee today and say that we have done just that. On December 17, 1997, we published our classified report of investigation of Volume 1 called The California Story that specifically focused on CIA knowledge of and actions taken regarding the individuals and events that were the focus of the Mercury News series. A little over a month later, on January 29th of this year, we released this report in an unclassified version following a classification review by the agency. I believe those of you on the committee who have read the classified version of Volume 1 and have had the opportunity to compare it with the unclassified version will agree that the information about this matter that is now publicly available does not differ in any significant way from that presented in the classified report. Our purpose is to provide the American public with the relevant facts without compromising information relating to the national security that the DCI is by law bound to protect. Our report presents an exhaustive array of facts and allows me to reiterate what I said before the Senate Select Committee in 96. We will present the unvarnished truth as we find it, and we'll do so to the best of our abilities. Today, I can say that we have done just that. We reviewed an estimated 250,000 pages of documents and used the information gleaned from these documents to conduct over 365 interviews of persons on four continents. These interviews included current and former directors and deputy directors of Central Intelligence, current and former senior agency staff personnel, secretaries, communicators, logistics personnel, operations officers, attorneys, present and former CIA assets, contractors, law enforcement personnel, former Contra leaders, convicted drug traffickers, and others. Our investigative team went to great lengths to obtain relevant documents. We sent officers to the National Archives to review records compiled by the Office of Independent Counsel for Iran-Contra matters. We examined CIA's own Iran-Contra records that comprised about 300 linear feet of agency and other executive branch documents. We worked directly with DEA, FBI, and the Department of Justice IG to obtain relevant information from the files of those organizations. We reviewed reporting from other intelligence community agencies, including NSA and DIA, that had been shared with CIA. We contacted DOJ's National Drug Intelligence Center and DEA's El Paso Intelligence Center to seek further information. We reviewed available congressional records, including relevant information compiled by the Kerry Committee and the Intelligence Oversight Committees, and spoke with individuals associated with the Joint Iran-Contra Investigating Committee and Office of Independent Counsel for Iran-Contra Matters. It is important to note, Mr. Chairman, that our investigation was not intended to prove or disprove allegations of drug trafficking by specific individuals or organizations. Rather, our 17-person team worked some 18 months to identify, let me underscore, number one, any information in CIA's possession relating to Danilo Blandón, Norwin Meneses, or Ricky Ross. Number two, any information in CIA's possession relating to possible drug trafficking activities by the Contras in California and elsewhere in the United States, and what action, if any, CIA may have taken upon receiving that information. And third, any contacts between CIA and law enforcement authorities regarding that information. I believe our investigation is the most comprehensive and exhaustive ever conducted by the CIA Office of Inspector General, and that the report of investigation reflects accurately what was found by our team. Having said that, one may ask if it is possible that there is some relevant document we did not find or some relevant person we did not interview that would alter our conclusions. As for the documents, the answer to that is yes, it is possible, but I do not believe it is likely. As for individuals, the report explains that six former CIA employees and a former DEA agent refused our request to be interviewed. We had no power to compel them to do so. Given the effort I have described, however, I do not believe it is likely that any significant information that would have substantially altered the conclusions of this volume has escaped our attention. Now let me turn to the findings of Volume 1. Before I go any further, I want to make clear that we found absolutely no evidence to indicate that CIA as an organization or its employees were involved in any conspiracy to bring drugs into the United States. The first half of Volume 1 discussed CIA knowledge of the activities of Ross, Landone, and Meneses. Ross, Landone, and Meneses are convicted drug dealers. Our investigation found no information to indicate that any past or present employee of CIA or anyone else acting on behalf of CIA had any dealings with Ross, Landone, or Meneses, or had any knowledge of their drug trafficking activities. Ross was a drug dealer who, by his own admission, says his sole motivation was to derive personal financial gain from the illegal trafficking of drugs. During the 1980s, Ross was a major cocaine and crack trafficker who says he made millions in the drug trade. His activities helped to foster the crack epidemic that erupted in South Central Los Angeles. However, Ross told us that he never sold drugs for the Contras or donated any money to the Contras. CIA never had any relationship with Ross. Likewise, Blandone and Meneses also trafficked in drugs to derive personal financial gain. While CIA had no relationship with Blandone and Meneses, our investigation did find that Blandone and Meneses were affiliated with California Contra support organizations.
This is some of the stuff that happened in our country, the mess up our community, the drugs and what happened. That was the report. I want you to have that report, to know that report. That's the report of what happened. And that's the real report of what went on in America. So I want to share that with you tonight. That was the report of the CIA, FBI, and all the agencies that have dropped all those drugs in our community. That's why our community is so ragged. So this is some of the things that's going on. And, you know, I want to tell you that it's important to understand what our community is going through now with all the guns, the killing, and the drugs, the pills that's coming from Mexico and killing children. So somebody is making money off of selling illegal guns. There's too many guns in the community. There's too many guns that's in our community. And this is a...
close as San Salvador. There's a rumor that said that Columbus came to America. He did not come to America. He came to an island off America. Vespucci came to America, not Columbus. He came to the Caribbean. But it is commonly stated, just as much as they state, that Columbus discovered America while the Indians sat down watching doing. Now, but all the knowledge of Africans in the Americas, quite knowledgeable to scholars, the fact that it's suppressed doesn't have any validity at all.
Let me bounce a couple of things off of you. One thing, this article that I'm going to be referring to our home audience and to our studio audience, this article came out in the September 1981 issue of Science Digest, and it's entitled Black Kings in Ancient America. You and some other black scholars believe that these people, African people, came to this continent before Columbus.
We don't believe, we know.
How do we know?
But the evidence is there. For example, when you go to Central America, the Yucatan Peninsula, and Ecuador and places like that, they have patches of Carthaginian money from 200 feet down in the ground, meaning that there were fluvial disruptions, and those money was buried. So it indicates a period of time, at least from that, when you look at the stratas, you could tell the period of time in which they've been here. And when you're talking about Carthage, you're talking about at least 212 BC when Carthage was finally destroyed by the Romans. Again, the Queen Makeda, which you call the Queen of Sheba, there are maps which Rome, the church in Rome, the so-called Holy Father, has suppressed these maps from the time of Justinian, showing South America and what is today called Central America. The maps there and Victoria, I mean, I'm sorry, Makeda goes back to at least 892 BC.
Before Christ.
Let's
point out another thing, just from the same article. I don't know if we can see this on television. But here is, tell me what this is, and why do you see this as proof of the presence of Africans in America before?
That is the head of an Olmec. And the Olmecs were said to be the first of the indigenous Americans. And if an Olmec walked in here, then you would believe that he had come from the middle of Africa. And there is no doubt about it that all of the writers prior to racism admitted that the Olmecs were, in fact, Africans who had come across here. There is no doubt. When Pignatetto and others, the point is that Van Settema is writing and others, but Leo Wiener, in 1938 at Harvard University, wrote a two-volume book for which he was fired about the Africans, Olmecs being Africans.
And let me bounce this off of you, okay? You take the same statue. Mm-hmm. You say, well, you said that they're obviously black features, thick lips, broad nose,
The stereotype.
Okay, the stereotype. Other anthropologists say, I think Michael Cole was one of them. He says that this is not a black man. He said the people who made these statues, which I understand are 8 feet high, the people who made these statues didn't have sharp enough tools to give them white features, so they're not really black statues. They're white people carved them. What's your response to that?
It's strange that the tools were not sharp enough to make narrow noses, but it was sharp enough to put eyelids. So it would seem to me that an eyelid is harder to make than a thin nose. But Michael Cole is no less a racist than the head of the Ku Klux Klan. I mean, what's the difference between Michael Cole, Reagan, and the Ku Klux Klan? It had the same philosophy. What is the difference between the fellows writing the Bible and writing about the Queen of Sheba saying to Solomon, look not, ye daughters of Cana, look not upon me because I'm black. My parents sent me in the vineyard and that's all this nonsense. She's black because nature made her black. Her mother and father were black. That's why she's black. I'd love to do my going in any vineyard, even though it's in the Bible.
Yeah, you talked about religion. We're going to get to that in a while. Let me turn to Dr. Simmons. You also agree with this position that Africans were in this
country. I have no problem, no doubt.
Well,
as a matter of fact, speaking about, like Dr. Ben mentioned, and you spoke about Michael Nico, I own a book several years ago and still have it in my possession by Michael Nico himself, who is considered one of America's leading archaeologists and anthropologists from Yale, one of America's most prestigious schools. In his own work, he referred to them as Negroids. And he went farther to state the title of the book is America's First Civilization. What do you call civilization? And to turn around and to tell these youngsters and other people in America in particular that the black men were the first to build any type of civilization in the Americas will be disturbing to Americans. And so...
Let me ask you this. Even if you're right, let's say you're right, what difference does it make?
It makes a lot of difference.
What kind of difference?
It takes the inferiority complex out of the black men who felt that his only beginning and relationship here in this part of the world is that of slavery. then it puts him in the driver's seat. Because, again, they don't tell you that there are man-made hills within the United States. They call them mountains. And they range from in the Midwest all the way down the eastern seacoast of the United States. And they have found artifacts in them that are similar to things found in West Africa and in Egypt, which is Northeast Africa, that predates the arrival of the so-called indigenous Indians to these lands. Another thing is some years ago, one of the major television networks back in New York, I don't remember exactly which one, ABC or which, had done a documentary. And they said that these Olmecs are the ones who brought right into the Americas about 3000 BC to tell blacks that they ought to be glad to enter into these schools of higher learning today in order to read and write, because their ancestors back in Africa couldn't read and write. You see how what it will do to tell them that they brought right into the Americas? Antonio Picavetta, that Dr. Ben mentioned, who sailed with Magellan when Magellan came to the so-called New World in 1519, when they landed at the land of Brazil, which we now call Brazil, they were met by people in canoes that carried as many as 40 people. And Antonio Picavetta recorded that these people were jet black. It seemed that they came out of the infernal marshes. That meant that they were burned. He said, naked and black as they are in 1519, 27 years after Columbus's arrival to the so-called New World. Another thing I don't tell you, again, you heard my associate.
Well, why haven't we heard this thing before? Why don't we read them in the New York Times, Birmingham News?
If I stole another man's country and I brought your ancestors here to work for me, could I tell you how great your ancestors were and still expect to keep you in slavery?
Well, let me give you a better, not better, Mr., but an added situation of that. Most black people in Birmingham, Alabama, like in Harlem, New York, are Christians, and they go to us in a black community, a black minister, a black congregation, but with a white Jesus, because they didn't know that Jesus, up until Pope Julius II, had the first black Jesus painted. He had Michelangelo to do it. But up until that time, the world worshipped the black Madonna and child. The present Pope is going back to Poland to worship at the statue of the black Madonna and child. That's in the New York Times. But what the Times says the next day, don't worry about the black Madonna and the child. She was originally white, but there was a storm in the 16th century passed by and turned it black. But the same storm must have gone to Spain, and then it went to Ethiopia, and it went to the Soviet Union and turned all the black Madonnas red. It was a hell of a storm.
Let's get together here. I mean, we're jumping around, and I think we're going to have a beautiful, interesting hour. Okay. Because this subject, I was going to get to this later, but since you opened it, let's deal with it. Okay. Well, you're in the Bible Belt, gentlemen.
I heard so.
You heard so. And I must tell our audience, we had dinner together earlier, and we got into this a little bit. So you're going to hear some interesting things. Because you guys are taking issue with a lot of what we grew up with in the Bible as fact. And you're telling me that's not so. You got
to. It is. I brought it right here.
What is this?
Well, I'll show you the picture you wanted to see.
Right.
This is Pope Pius XII. Right. In his private chapel, praying to the black Madonna and child, and all the popes of Rome, in their private, just from the church, the Roman Catholic Church itself. I just got rid of the copy of the History of the Black Madonna last night. I brought one copy. It's published by the Roman Catholic Order of Nuns called the Daughters of St. Paul. And they said that the picture of the black Madonna and child in Poland is reputed to have been painted by St. Luke. Now, St. Luke is said to have been one of Jesus' disciples. He ought to know what Jesus had looked like. So if he painted a black woman and child, who am I to say that he wasn't? Besides that, however, in Anacalypso,
so now you guys are saying Jesus is black?
We're just saying
what has been written on history. Up until the Nicene Conference of Bishops in 325, when Rome, under the order of Constantine, the Roman Emperor, ordered the 219th bishop at Nicaea, and they took away Christianity from the Africans. Just remember, that before they said Jesus was born in a manger in Bethlehem, they said he was born in a cave in Ethiopia. It was at the Nicene Conference that changed that. Let's go further. That,
wait a minute, let me be sure I'm following you. You're saying that the birth of Christ, as we know it,
mm-hmm.
is not accurate.
It's a farce. It was only
you realize what you're saying?
A farce, a lie. You know what a lie is?
A lie is a lie.
The person who wrote that at the Nicene Conference of Bishops in 325 A.D., Constantine, the Roman Emperor, ordered a conference be held because Rome wanted to take over Christianity from the people who started it. Christianity was started with Pantheus and Boethius in a place called Alexandria in Egypt. And Egypt is in Africa. I saw it up to January the 9th. It was there.
You talked about that a little bit last night in your lecture. There was a lecture last night from Dr. Simmons here on campus. You talked about the separation of people don't want to see Egypt as part of Africa. You talked about the historical thing about blacks being in Egypt as well.
Yes, what I did last night.
I don't want to get away from the other point.
No, what happened is that I dealt last night with the fact that Herodotus, the institutions of higher learning, white institutions, considered the father of history. He himself, when he visited Egypt around 450 B.C., almost half a thousand years before Christ, said that the Ethiopians, the Egyptians, the people of cultures, which is part of present-day Turkey, were people of black skin and woolly hair. All right? And so I just want you to understand that the Egyptians we now see are conquerors, just like people who came here and took this land from the Indians, so that they're not indigenous to Africa, those who now rule Egypt. And Egypt is just as much a part of Africa as Birmingham or Alabama is part of the so-called United States.
Let me just be clear on this. What you're saying to me now is that the people that we see, the Sadat and all those guys, are not too Egyptian.
So that's mother was a Sudanese. Nasser's mother was a Sudanese, but their fathers were Arab conquerors. The one that was the African was Mohammed Nadib, the first president of Egypt, the one that overthrew Farouk. But 1 year after that, since he was looking for a hookup with the other Nile Valley countries as it used to be in antiquity, he was removed by the Arab conquerors. The Arabs didn't come to Egypt until 640. The first non-African people came to Egypt, otherwise called the Hyksos, in 1675 B.C. The Africans there were already in the 13th dynastic period. They had built every pyramid you saw there before. They had done the S-turn in the Nile. They built every one of the major temples that had already been built, including the Grand Lodge of Luxor. The first European to come there did not arrive until the Greeks arrived with Alexander II, the son of Philip of Macedonia.
Look, I'm a college graduate. I never heard all that stuff.
Because they didn't intend to teach you that. They can't tell you that you're inferior and teach you that you taught Egypt and Europe. The first Europeans to be civilized by the Africans were the Greeks. When you heard of Homer, the first European to have written anything, you couldn't miss that. They said that Homer wrote the Iliad and the Odyssey. And that was not until 833 B.C. The Africans had already, in 255,000 at the Tassili Mountain, they had the Sibylline period, first, second, and third, the pre-dynastic period, all the way up. The Africans had produced men like this, Imhotep, the multi-genius that designed the step pyramid of Saqqara, the first man to be a physician that even Hippocrates, the so-called father of medicine, is giving him credit and calling him the god of medicine. The Greeks changed his name from Imhotep to Aesculapius. There he is. There he is.
This gets into what you're saying. So wait a minute. You guys are telling me now that black men taught Homer and
as a matter of fact,
Egypt was cool.
As a matter of fact, the Egyptians said Homer was Egyptian. That's Greek.
That's right. It's only the Europeans said that. The Westerners now said he was. But let us go back. Remember that Homer himself said in the Odyssey what? That the gods Zeus and Apollo, Europe's first gods, came from Ethiopia. Go read it. And I didn't write it. He wrote it. Thales, from Thales down to Socrates, and Socrates down to Aristotle, which they call the pre-Socratic philosophers, the post-Socratic philosophers, each and every one, including Plato, who spent 15 years in Egypt receiving their education.
You're saying Plato was educated in Egypt?
15 years. Before all have nothing of him. Every one of them.
What you have me believe in also, a part of what you said last night is that Plato and these guys went back home
and they were big guys.
But they were taught in Egypt? Is that what you
said? They came there.
They came there for education.
And they said it. They didn't hide it. It's the modern writers, the modern instructors and professors who were trendy to know it.
You can't have a racist school in Birmingham, non-racist education. Let me get to something you said last night that's not going to make you very popular in this town and may not allow you to get safely out of town. You told an audience last night that you saw, I think, in a tomb in Egypt.
Yes.
You saw with your own two eyes, right?
Yes.
You told me that Moses, there were more than 10 commandments. Moses just took
42. The negative confessions. Moses wasn't supposed to have been born until 1349 B.C. The Africans were already in the 18th dynastic period. Akhenaten, who died before Moses was born, and Inhotep, who died more than 2,000 years before the birth of Moses, and others at the Grand Lodge of Mem, had 42 laws called now the negative confession, one for each no. They go like this: I have not killed man nor woman. I have not spoken ill of the gods. Moses is supposed to have born in Egypt, they said, at a place called Succoth. Already, it says that Moses get the Ten Commandments of Mount Sinai. Mount Sinai is still in Africa, right? The Sinai Peninsula is a part of Egypt. More so, is it possible for Moses to be born in Egypt, educated in Egypt? At age 85, he's still in Egypt, and he did not learn the negative confessions. Is it possible for you to go to school, born in the United States, go to kindergarten, elementary, junior high school, and college, and never heard of the United States Constitution? Then it would have been impossible for Moses, when everybody had to read the negative confession 5 times a day, for Moses not to have seen those 42 laws and extracted 10 of them, leave 32 more. Now, you could go to the temple of Setaiwan at Abydos, to go to the tomb of Ramesses VI at the Valley of the Kings, go to the temple of Edfu, where you would, by the way, see the story of an immaculate conception and a virgin birth 4,100 years before the Mary and Jesus story.
I don't know that right way.
No, let me just put it in the form of a question here. I mean, I don't want to stop this because we're here for information. But what you're trying to get me to believe is that Moses didn't get the Ten Commandments from Mount Sinai, but he got them from his fellow Africans.
Moses was a high priest of Egypt. He was a high priest of the Egyptians in Egypt. Then what was he teaching? He wasn't a high priest of the Jews.
There were no Jews in those days, they called them. Remember now, there was no Israel yet. Israel is not until 1196. And when we hear of Abraham, Avram, as he was called, coming into Egypt, the Africans are already in Egypt, already in their 14th dynastic period when he shows up. All of the pyramids are built. That's another thing. Everyone, the 62 pyramids in Egypt were built before the person who was born.
Why was he fleeing from the Pharaoh?
Let me ask
what was the charge?
I can write anything when I want to write, you know. Who's going to stop me from writing if I got the power? I was about to ask you, what kind of trouble do you get into for holding these kind of things?
Oh, without a doubt, my black sister spat on my face because she couldn't take that. She couldn't take that Jesus was black. She said, no. I mean, he had no color. If he didn't have no color, how John the Baptist saw him to baptize him?
Do you realize that you're getting at the foundation, that you're shooting and digging away at the foundation of what most of us grew up believing?
Yeah, well, we believe a lot of things for a long time. One thing, they give us 3 pages in the Bible. Slave obey your master, and that's what we believe for the longest time. They said that Jesus said, so how would Jesus, who fought the system, say to the slave, obey your master? It didn't sound rational, would it? So, look, most of the things, we're in a European system. You could come to this university and spend 4 years, go back and spend another 2 for your masters, and another 1 or 2 for your doctorate, and never had any course at all about Africans. But every day you come here, you got courses about Europeans. This is an extension of European culture, European belief, European racism. And it has no intent of teaching about the Africans. The Africans built the European first university, the University of Salamanca in Spain. These are historical records.
Okay, one of the things you said last night is that it's not just black people who are saying it.
No, most of this information are written by whites.
And white books.
It's just that they don't emphasize it in the classroom. As a matter of fact, let me back you up when you open up the discourse. We were speaking about Columbus. None of them in here, none of the listening audience, even in the air, has the faintest idea that in the life of Columbus, when after his death, his family had to go to court because charges were raised, and this is in the record, in the Vatican, in the secret archives of the Vatican, that Columbus was shown a map of where the Queen of Sheba that Dr. Ben spoke about, this black woman who had mated with Solomon and produced the son, Melanick I, and they lived more than 900 years before the birth of Jesus, had already sailed through what we now call the Strait of Gibraltar, came to lands to the west that was longer than Africa and Europe combined. And that, brother, is North, South, and Central America.
May I add this? You, right here at this university, they teach, and I've just been here a day. They teach in this institution because the same as Cornell and Wales. Dr. Hippocrates was the father of medicine. He's not until 333 B.C. Let me read this for you.
Okay, you teach at Cornell.
I teach at Cornell also.
And they teach this kind of stuff, Cornell?
They teach it now. I'm there.
Okay.
1700, in 1700 B.C., that's 1400 years before Hippocrates, you can find the Cahoon Medical Papyrus of paper.
Okay.
A compendium of information about women's diseases and pregnancies. In 1600 B.C., that's 1300 years before Hippocrates, the Edward C. Smith Papyrus, a comparative surgical text and anatomical inquiry. It especially deals with spinal column. 1550, let me jump to one here. The Ebers Papyrus. A medical, there is the whole book in it. A medical paper by Queen Hatshepsut, the first known queen in history, an Egyptian queen. A papyrus designed to show women how to develop a method to stop pregnancy, to insert into the vagina, made of the shrub of acacia and honey, which breaks down into lactic acid. Not only that, Monsanto, DuPont.
So we talked about birth control
in 1550 B.C. by the Africans.
It's a long time before a pill.
A few days before.
Keep in mind, however, that Europe is not yet in history.
All I have one at a time.
Okay.
The civilization began. Homer, I'm not written as Iliad and Odyssey. I'm the hero.
Okay, all the stuff that you're saying we can find it.
It's not here. It's either in Doc's library or mine back in New York. Nothing we take for granted.
For the books that we brought up.
And you said they're not all written by black men.
Anacalypse is written, look now. Okay. Anacalypse is a two-volume work by Sir Godfrey Higgins, written in 1838 in England and published by Watson Company. The Golden Bough is a 13-volume book by Sir James Frazer, published simultaneously in the United States and England, and it was published in 1938. Bible Myths and the Parallels in Other Religions, written by Thomas W. Jones, and is published in 1887 by Watson Company, London, England. The Ruins of Empire by Kong Siak Volney is published, there it is. It's published in 1792 by simultaneously in England and France, done by a man who was Napoleon de Bonaparte.
Let me just say this about that. If we just give you the benefit of the doubt and consider what you're saying to be true, I mean, you are chipping away at everything we've ever been taught, most of what we believe.
Many were taught it as slaves. Nobody.
Slave in three people?
Yes. We are no longer physical slaves, but we are mental slaves. And this is the worst form of slavery. Some of us believe that the Cadillac and the house on the beach makes us free. But it's the mind that makes us free.
Well, I'm just glad I have to ask questions. I don't have to spin any of this stuff. Go into something else, man. Tell us about some of those pictures, because
this picture that you were looking at right here is the picture of Pope Saint Peter, the first Pope of Roman Catholicism, as the Church admits.
But
the Church said, "Hey, black face, black everything."
If you're stripping black all the way down except your fingernails and all those things.
Well, how do I know you just didn't get a picture and paint a black face on?
No, that is the statue in Rome. That's it
now.
Take the fastest means and go to Rome and come back.
Right,
and then tell us if it's not. That same picture, I used to teach at Roman Catholic.
This is there now?
Yes, no. Every pope kisses a stone. They said his stones are worn by the thousand kisses placed there. If the book that I got it from was not that heavy, I'll bring it that you see the Pope kissing Pope John the 23rd.
Who is this black guy?
Saint Peter. The man that they told you, every black minister, every white minister says, Jesus gave Peter the keys to heaven, which means that no white man, nobody else could enter into heaven unless he come by way of me, the black man. But I hold the keys to heaven.
Right. And there's no reason why Peter should not open for me. He suffered too then.
What else you got there? Well, what I have here is some black saints. Saint Augustine, some of you say the Saint Augustine, Saint John Chrysostom, Saint Athanasius, and Saint Ambrose. Black saints of the church. You have to remember that Christianity is called in Europe and by Europeans as a new religion.
Right.
It was alien to Europe. Emperor Constantine is the one who decided to take it. He said, I need a religion to unify my empire. With this religion, I could then conquer the world. And he himself was never a Christian until on his dying bed in the year 337 when he became converted to Christianity. But he took it to unify the empire.
Isn't it Augustine, in his unchristian doctrines, he wrote 48 different works. The two most noted in the West is his confessions, which he specified who he was, and then the Holy City Abroad, and the last was on Christian doctrine, the fundamental principles of modern Christianity. Three black women, Felicita, Perpetua, and Nymphano, were the first to die for Jesus Christ. Next, and they were from what is today called,
how do you know this?
It's in the documents of the church. And it's in the writing of the church. And was it not... Pope Malthazar, the three African popes of the Roman Catholic Church, Malthazar, Victor III, and the other one,
Galatius.
Galatius. We have them there. Now, these are church documents. But remember, when there came a time in 1506, after we lost power in Spain, the Africans ruled Spain from 1711. We were calling ourselves Moors, M-A-U-E-R-S, then M-O-O-R-S. From 1711 until 1485, 774 years, when we built and brought into Europe the university system, building the University of Salamanca, S-A-L-A-M-A-N-C-A, in Spain, a copy of the University of Genève from ancient Ghana, which was equally a copy of the University of Sankore in Tombouctou, which the French later called Timbuktu. Now, look, you want to read it, read Stanley Lane Poole's The Moors in Spain, written in 1887, or Alejandro Metaziza read his book in Spanish, The Moors in Spain, and said that even the Basque was introduced by those Africans.
You said the Basque was introduced by...
The Basque was reintroduced because Rome had a Basque before, but they stopped because of not understanding the Christian doctrine that the Europeans had embraced, they stopped for over 1,000 years from taking back. Matter of fact, that's like to make Matthew the fact that the Queen, Victoria of England, boasting of herself being the cleanest woman in all of Europe, taking one bath per month. I have books show you where people were made saints for boasting and never even washed their hands. Saints of the church.
Did you have a copy with dirt with you?
No, I didn't bring too many.
Okay, let me, because you guys are bombarding us so much. Just tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do on a day-to-day basis.
Well, my name is Joseph Ben-Yekanen. I teach at Cornell University History and Egyptology. I'm an author, former member of United Nations, graduate with a PhD from Cambridge University in England, a PhD from the University of Barcelona in Spain. That should help. I originally was a civil engineer who turned to anthropology and history with a law degree and practiced law. Now, black people have to know a little bit more to get a job. And I was born in Ethiopia and came to the Caribbean as a young fellow at age 6. My mother's a Puerto Rican, and we lived and grew up in Puerto Rico and the Bronx. My father was a barrister.
And I, as I said, worked with the United Nations and then finally started teaching at Columbia University and other places. Got fired a number of times, of course.
I would imagine so.
I said, yes, with this kind of thing, they don't want, with the documents in my hand. When I exposed that tampering was nothing new,
okay,
that it was done in Africa as early as 1550, I was fired on the spot by Professor Ralph Linton. But about 10 years later, the American Medical Association published the Ebers Papyrus, the same thing I got fired for.
Okay, I want to get back to something in one of your books. Maybe just tell us, our audience at home and studio audience, a little bit about yourself, Dr.
Oh, I'm not as fortunate as Dr. Ben. Dr. Ben is the intellectual. So I like to be the other extreme. I like to say that my college is that of hard knocks. And I use myself as the example of as to how high a black man could come from mother wit. Mother wit in the sense that it is said that blacks are not intelligent. And so that what we do is compliment each other. He being the extreme with all the degrees, and I will remain the little fellow in the street. However, the little fellow in the street have taught at some of your best colleges and taught the professors so that they could teach you. I've taught at Marist College. I've lectured for Yale. I have lectured mostly best institutions. I just went to do a week seminar in the state of Washington to educate some professors how to teach in teaching and teaching logic. I think what happened, like some people say, well, Simmons, why don't you go and get the thing? I said, no, at my age, I'm not looking for prestige, but my children will. And since there's a thing that black people are dumb, I like to sit back being dumb and just waste the intellectual other folks away.
But he's being very modest.
I'm looking for that.
He's my associate in my office.
That's all right.
And yes, and at Malcolm King College, and was the chairman of the Department of History in many schools, so he's being modest.
Let's get back to some of this. Let me see that for a moment. Let's get back to some of the stuff we were talking about last night and talking about it today. You guys just took on the Bible.
And which one? There are many Bibles. You got about 3,000 versions. And the one that most people here believe in is the King James Version. And when a version is not a fact, the version is something like the original. And James commissioned 47 men under Sir Francis Bacon. He pulled them from Cambridge University, Oxford University, University of Eton, and University of Scotland at Glasgow. Those 47 men wrote God's words.
You're not going to be very popular in this area.
I didn't plan to be.
Okay. This quote from one of your books, and this will be available to our studio audience, and we'll talk about this a little bit after we hear. And I'm not even sure I should read this. This is from the Bible.
That's the Bible. You should read it. Read what was in Genesis up until the 6th century. It is still in the Book of Mormon. That's the people in Salt Lake City, which many blacks have joined because they'll join the Ku Klux Klan as the open membership. It is still in the Calvinist teaching in South Africa, and read what was in the Bible up until the 6th century.
You're saying that this is still in the Mormon Bible?
It's still in the Mormon Bible. It is still in the Calvinist Bible. And look at the bottom where the Roman Catholic Church had it, and they now make an excuse that they were sorry that it was ever in there, but nevertheless it was.
Let me just share this with our audience here and our audience at home. And this is from one of Dr. Ben's books.
And from all the books, that it's on page 120 and 21 in that book.
Let me just share a little bit of it here, because I want to get some reaction from you. And it's something for folks to think about. And you said this is from the Bible. Therefore, it must be Canaan, your firstborn, whom they enslave. And I'm starting in kind of the middle because there's a lot of it here. And since you have disabled me, doing ugly things in blackness of night, Canaan's children shall be born ugly and black. Moreover, because you twisted your head around to see my nakedness, your grandchildren's hair shall be twisted into kinks and their eyes red. Again, because your lips jested at my misfortune, theirs shall swell. And because you neglected my nakedness,
they shall go naked. And the rest of this stuff is underlined, and this is a quote from the book, the Bible, you say. And their male members shall be shamefully elongated. Men of this race are called Negroes. Their forefather Canaan commanded them to love theft and fornication, to be banded together in hatred of their master, and never to tell the truth.
That's right. It was in the Judeo-Christian Bible until the 6th century of the Christian era, also called A.D., Antedominion. And some black ministers refer to it. Just a few weeks ago in New York, I was listening to my radio, one of these religious programs sponsored by a liquor store. And it says, the minister says that these young blacks are acting up. We shouldn't act up anyhow, because when we die and we go to heaven, we're going to be white anyhow. So we say anything. Remember that we did not know that Christianity came from Egypt, and that the first monastery was on the island of Philae, which is still there now, and that the Christianity went into Ethiopia and all of North Africa, where they had 7 patriarchs and 27 bishops before the first one in Greece or Rome. We knew nothing about that. We didn't know. Up to now, you've got black people sending missionaries to Africa. Now,